There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
And it's Jeff Poor filling in for Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Joining us on the line right now is Dale Jackson up from North Alabama on WVNN. You know him here in Mobile. He's on Saturdays at 11:30 and with Guerrilla Politics. He's also the author of Yellowhammer News' Seven Things You Need to Read Today. It's Dale Jackson. Dale, thanks for coming on with us.
Absolutely. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, it's usually the other way around. I'm usually the guest on your show. So excuse me while I fumble around as a radio host.
Don't worry about it. Nobody knows what they're doing. We're all faking. So don't worry about it.
Well, some do it, but some fake it better than the others. I'll just add it, leave it at that. So you've been writing a lot about Walt Maddox, the gubernatorial race, and we talked a little bit about it last hour. The debate topic seems to be the prevailing issue in this gubernatorial race. It otherwise is not really a contest. But you read all the people who are smarter than you and I, and the thing they say that the state really, really, really needs right now is a gubernatorial debate. And, you know, I question that wisdom. Well, what's your take on this?
They want a debate because they hope Kay Ivey falls down on her face. That's it. That's all they want. They know that Walt Maddox and his ideas, if expressed honestly, have absolutely no chance of winning the gubernatorial race. And Kay Ivey, the only way she can lose is if they can take some sort of issue and do to it what they did to Roy Moore. That's it. And it doesn't have to be... And forget about whether you think Roy Moore is guilty of these crimes or not. They would just utilize that same framework, whatever happened with Kay Ivey. If she coughs, oh, man, she must be sick. If she stumbles in a real way, oh, man, oh, man. If she makes a gaffe, oh, man, she shouldn't be... You know, that's all they want. And she's wise to not give it to him. Let them complain about debates. Nobody cares about that. They just, okay, Kay Ivey's afraid to debate. Good, she'll win by 15 points.
And none of this moves the needle. So when you talk about the Democratic Party in Alabama, usually you have an opposition party. They run against the president. But there's been a real reluctance, I think, from a lot of the candidates running for statewide office in Alabama to go after Donald Trump. But what do you think the modern Democratic Party in Alabama stands for? To me, that's a question I couldn't answer, and I couldn't tell you off the top of my head.
They stand for liking John Archibald and Josh Moon Sweet. That's it. I mean, that's essentially it. That's all they do. I mean, that's it. They serve no other purpose. They don't have an actual, in their mind, an enemy. They think that everyone agrees with them, and it's just insane that the rednecks in the hinterlands are unable to understand that it would be so smart to just embrace their version of the world, and because of that, they're just a bunch of dumb hicks. So eventually, if Josh Moon and John Archibald and Kyle Whitmire and those guys write enough columns calling those people ignorant rednecks and racist, they'll eventually change their ways. They're just one away. They're one away from that.
Yeah, and you don't get a sense. So. Even today, John Archibald has a column out making the same case that Kay Ivey owes the people of Alabama a debate. I just want to know, when has anybody at AL.com really cared what the people of Alabama deserve, need, or want, or have a right to? It seems to me that that's a convenient talking point for them, but they don't really mean it. They don't really care what you ignorant, dumb rednecks in Alabama think. They're more interested in using this to score political points, but when you look at what they actually stand for, then you have to wonder, like, how authentic is this?
And, like you said, then what? I mean, what points are being scored here? There's no points being scored here. This is those guys slapping each other on the back and telling each other they found a new way to call KIV old. I mean, that's all it is. And they have nowhere to go from there. Because if eventually they have to start talking about what Doug Jones really thought on abortion, or if they have to talk about what Walt Maddox thinks about guns, it's over. So they're more interested in talking about the fact that Kay Ivey won't stand on the stage with the guy.
Yeah, and, you know, let's give them the debate, and let's say it's on the stage, and, you know, all 50 people in this state that care about this stuff are watching. If you're Walt Maddox, can you even lay a glove on Kay Ivey, or do you look like a mean guy? And I've always wondered about this. They like to talk about the importance of the debate, and if they get their debate, and you're looking at this from Walt Maddox's perspective, what are you going to do except show that you're more in shape than Kay Ivey?
Oh, you'd have to go super aggressive and pound away at her, and that's the only way. And you got to keep in mind, that's what the modern Democratic Party across the country stands for right now, screaming, yelling, being an absolute jerk to everyone you possibly can. Because they don't see your way. I mean, I had an event up here called Pints of Politics, and it's never been a debate set up. And the Democratic candidate for Congress, Peter Joffrion, running against Congressman Brooks, showed up at my event, and his supporters started screaming at me because there wasn't microphones in a debate to be had, as if they were going to bully me into a debate. And it's just, the whole thing makes no sense, because they believe that if only they had the opportunity to have every microphone in the state, like they already have, then people would listen to them. And it doesn't work. Once they get that debate, there's nowhere for them to go. Walt Maddox cannot explain away a Moms Demand Action endorsement to spin that into a Second Amendment endorsement. It makes no sense.
Yeah, and you know, they to me, it looks to me, and tell me this is your perception, that right now they're kind of the loudest voices, even though they're outnumbered probably two to one or 3-1 in most of the state. But they, I guess, they're riding the wave off the Doug Jones win last year, and that's giving them more voice. And there's this idea that the blue wave's going to come into Alabama and wash away all the Republicans, and it just doesn't seem very, very rooted in reality. And to me, that takes away from their argument. That makes them look less credible, because I don't know where you would get it. Where do you think that this is coming from, that you're going to actually have a Democratic candidate outside of the 7th Congressional District or some of the cities, the urban areas in Alabama, that's going to be able to really ride this quote-unquote blue wave?
Oh, they've got a legacy media that is telling them that what they want to hear, not the truth. I mean, that's just the reality. It's telling them what they want. There's no attempt to be a legitimate news outlet by our friends at AL.com and the TV stations. They don't care enough about local politics to really get into it. AL.com is the dominant force. Everyone feeds off of them. And their message is Alabama could be this liberal progressive utopia, just like the city of Birmingham. We'll cover up all the monuments, and that's a brave and heroic thing to do. We will expand Medicare, raise the minimum wage, do all the things that Democrats want to do, and then and only then will the knuckle-dragging Neanderthal racists who want to blow up churches, will they come around and understand that we're all people and everything is wonderful.
Yeah, you see a dwindling circulation from a lot of these newspapers. If it wasn't for Auburn or Alabama football, I would argue a lot of them wouldn't even exist. And even the state weeklies, the weekly newspapers, local newspapers around the state seem to have that same idea. They're a little more progressive, a little more left-leaning. They, you know, if they weren't for high school football or some of the local stuff, they wouldn't exist, or primarily in Alabama. I think it's the legal advertising that keeps them afloat. But the legacy media in Alabama, you know, what happens after that? Does it, you know, are we just going to exist to have a John Archbold, a Kyle Whitmire, a J.D. Crow, a place for them to have a forum? And I you know, You talk to these guys and they have such a disdain for talk radio. They look down on talk radio as, like you said, the knuckle dragger Neanderthals of the state. But to me, you see, and talk radio seems to have a little bit of a wind at its sails. Is that the sense you get?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, here's the thing: they live in a world where there's no accountability. I mean, there's no accountability, none. They don't have to answer anybody. They can respond to who they want to on social media and ignore everybody else. They know their bosses think just like they do. It's not about anything. I mean, go read the comment section on AL.com. And I know we keep beating that up, but go read the comment section. It's 90% liberal, patting these guys on the back, agreeing with everything they say. That's not the state of Alabama. I mean, it doesn't represent anything. It represents their newsroom, and nothing more. And when all of this is over, they'll look back and they'll say, well, we got Doug Jones. And that showed that we were right about where the state is, even though we all know that the Doug Jones race was an abnormality. And unless Kay Ivey's a rapist, I don't think we're going to see that repeated.
All right. Well, as the Cliff Sims used to call AL.com, it's a sports blog with a liberal bias.
Yep.
You stay for one more segment, Dale?
Yeah, I can.
All right. This is Jeff Poor in for Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Want to hear from you, 251-343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And this is not Sean Sullivan. This is Jeff Poor filling in for Sean Sullivan, who's wrapping up his vacation somewhere tropical, I assume, right now as we speak. On the line, holding on the line with me still, is Dale Jackson from WVNN. He's the co-host, he and Wayman Burke, of Guerrilla Politics. It airs on FM Talk 106.5 at 11:30 a.m. on Saturdays. And he's also seen on the pages of Yellowhammer News. Dale, we were talking last hour a little bit about the legacy media. I want to, you know, kind of switch gears and look at some national things, especially from, like, I know, just reading your Twitter feed and listening to your show sometimes, and the way you go after your callers over Trump and the tariffs and how they seem to defend Trump no matter at what cost. Well, you know, what's your takeaway from that? What's driving that? I always thought it was a little cynical for these candidates to run Trump, 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 Trump. But is there maybe some reality to that Trump is as popular as everyone says?
Absolutely. There was a really great piece written in Commentary Magazine by a guy named Noah Roth, a regular guest on my program. And he basically says, this is no different than when the Iron Sheik takes on Hulk Hogan. And the crowd is all into it, and they're 100% behind Hulk Hogan. They think they're part of the act, when really they're just the root. And that's basically what it is. The wrestling fans are called marks for a reason. It goes back to the Carney days where they were marked for being scammed. And that's a little bit of this. I mean, I'm a Trump supporter. I voted for him. I like 90% of what he does. I could go without the tweeting and the attacks on Jeff Sessions and the tariffs, but the rest I'm cool with. But when you say, hey, explain to me why he's attacking Jeff Sessions, and they say, I support Trump 100%. Well, it's not really a response. Make America great again. It's like, well, wait a second. I mean, why is he doing this? Because Jeff Sessions is a swamp. I mean, it's just, again, you might as well be holding up a sign at a wrestling.
Well, when you talk about Jeff Sessions, I mean, he's I always thought he was like the most invincible Republican ever in this state, but Donald Trump is showing that not to be the case. And I work at Breitbart, so, you know, take my perspective, you know, for what it is. But Jeff Sessions isn't really living up to the expectations I think a lot of people had for him. And
what do people want him to do? Do they want him to say, okay, we're arresting every Democrat, we're putting them in jail, and any one of them that did anything even remotely on the far side of the law is getting locked up? I mean,
I would say, first of all, probably not recuse yourself from all this Russia investigation. To me, maybe he jumped a gun on that. It probably was warranted, but it seemed to be a immediate reaction to what had happened, you know, with the media. He got pressured by the media something. So that, to me, that's a legitimate criticism. The other thing I think a lot of Republicans have a problem with is, if you talk to these congressional Republicans, the way the DOJ is stonewalling a lot of these congressional investigations, now granted they're for show or whatever you want to say, but there's still congressional investigations, there's still congressional subpoenas, and these are people elected by the people to subpoena these things, and Jeff Sessions seems to be stonewalling, or at least part of this stonewall process. I think, to me, that doesn't that seem to you, at least, that maybe that's another fair criticism. Maybe Jeff Sessions, you would think, was going to come in, he was going to changed the culture of the deep state, quote-unquote deep state, the administrative state or whatever, and he really hasn't done that. I don't think people really want him out arresting Democrats, but I do think there was this idea that things were going to change, and maybe it's not really happening. Maybe it's not happening at face value. Maybe it's happening behind the scenes, but I think that's where some of this is coming from.
Well, I think that's true. I mean, just think about this. The recusal stuff, I completely agree with. Maybe he recused himself too soon, but listen, I don't think Jeff Sessions or Donald Trump think they colluded with the Russians. And I think the idea here behind all of this was, for Jeff Sessions, was, I'm going to recuse myself. This whole thing's going to investigate. It's going to be absolutely nothing, and we're all going to move forward. And that's it. Well, the guy at the top won't shut up about it, so it continues to drag on and on and on and on and on. And that's why you can't say things like end the investigation. But as to your comments about the deep state and all that stuff, the DOJ, I'm not so sure how much of that he's involved in, because, yes, he's the attorney general, but all of this stuff is connected to the Russia stuff. So I don't know how much of that he's actually able to play a role in. I'd like to see them stop stonewalling, hold them in contempt, do what they're... But Congress has a mechanism to punish people who do what they're doing, all this stonewalling, and they should use it.
Well, they you're right, but... What, you know, how realistic is that mechanism? I think people wanted more out of Trump, and are more, you know, not have to rely on Congress, not have to rely on Congress as a mechanism. You voted for this guy and you expected him to put people in place, and maybe this falls on Trump, but like you said, everybody's just pro-Trump. But, you know, Trump could fire Jeff Sessions. Now, the problem with that is, could he get somebody else in there and confirmed by the Congress? I don't think so. So he has to lean on Jeff Sessions. So the idea that you know Jeff Sessions is just impervious to any of these criticisms, you know,
doesn't it sound like Jeff Sessions cares?
Well, when you hear him speak, what do you think? What is your takeaway from it? I don't get a sense of anything from him.
Yeah, no, I get a sense that Jeff Sessions is there doing what he said he was going to do, what he wanted to do, and that's be the Attorney General of the great state, or excuse me, of the United States of America. And that's what Jeff Sessions wanted to do. He doesn't want to be involved in all this stupid Donald Trump tweeting nonsense. He has no interest in that. He's not responding piece by piece. He's going out there and doing what he thinks that his job is. And, you know, the president's making his job harder. And, you know, like you just said, what's Trump going to do? Fire him? Trump's put himself in a situation where he can't. And it's his own fault. He should just shut up about it and try to work with the people he appointed and make America great again, as opposed to making your Twitter account great again.
Well, is this it for Jeff Sessions? After he leaves the Department of Justice, he's not going to run for anything in Alabama.
Nah, he's done. I saw the whole Jeff Sessions should run against Doug Jones. That would be the great matchup. Please, they'd slice and dice him to death for not loving Donald Trump enough. I don't think he could win another seat in Alabama now. I just don't think he could.
That's a remarkable statement. You don't think he could beat Doug Jones?
Now, I'm not saying he couldn't beat Doug Jones, but I don't think he can make it out of a Republican primary.
What is your take on that primary? So, you know, you look around the state right now, it looks like Bradley Burns definitely going to run. I Del Marsh looks like he's kind of positioning himself. Do you what's your feeling on that? Mo Brooks maybe? Who are some of the people lining up for that 2020 run?
Well, Burns already hinted pretty strongly that Mo Brooks isn't running. I'm not sure if I buy that. Mo Brooks never told me that. And I talk to Mo Brooks pretty regularly. Byrne is clearly running, and he is just the tip of the spear fighting Doug Jones at every opportunity. So if Del Marsh or someone else is going to jump in there, they better start pounding away and stop letting Byrne be the guy who fights this battle. But, I mean, we got 2 years out. We'll see what Doug Jones becomes. But here's what Doug Jones is doing. He's doing the same thing he did with abortion. He's just kind of sitting there and saying, well, gee golly, I don't know what I believe. And then eventually he's going to have to make a decision, making nobody happy with his wishy-washy stuff on this. So I don't really see Doug Jones. Doug Jones knows he's a caretaker senator. He's not a real player here unless Roy Moore rises from the grave and decides to run again.
Yeah, is there a chance that, you know, do you think the Republicans are going to be responsible this time, at least the voters? Nominate somebody that's not going to be a Roy Moore. Are we going to hear this during this primary? I know, and we're 2 years out, but didn't you guys learn your lesson from 2 years ago or 3 years ago when it was, you know, when it was Roy Moore? We had Luther Strange, and he would have been presentable, and he would have won that race, and we wouldn't be talking about Doug Jones right now. But you see, like, this transition Republican Party. Where are we at right now on this continuum?
Well, you got to keep in mind, you know, the media told us that Mitt Romney was an extremist and John McCain was an extremist. And now Donald Trump is here, and both those guys, oh my God, they were the standard bearers. How could this be? How could this be the Republican Party? you know, that kind of stuff. So, and I think we're seeing that on the state level as well. You know, again, they're going to treat Kay Ivey like she's just some abnormality. And anyone who runs is going to be treated exactly the same way. The Roy Moore cloud over whoever the Republican nominee will be there. Did you vote for Roy Moore? The media will ask those questions over and over and over again, trying to figure out exactly where these people stood. And you know, it's just, that's what they're going to do. But unless they're able to put someone up who is interesting in any way, shape, or form, but not a cancerous candidate like a Roy Moore, they'll be fine. I mean, it's just, Byrne is that guy. Del Marsh is that guy. Mo Brooks is that guy. They could all stand there and pound away at Doug Jones on their own, something Roy Moore couldn't do.
All right, well, there you have it. Del, thanks for coming on with me today, filling in for Sean Sullivan. And tell folks, you know, where they could find more to read about you on social media.
You can go to yellowhammernews.com. We have Guerrilla Politics. Obviously, you mentioned that. I write a column at Yellowhammer News as well. I mean, just Google Dale Jackson. You'll find me. Or on Twitter, at the Dale Jackson. I'll fight with you there.
Yeah, that's a good read. Twitter.com/TheDaleJackson. All right, Dale. Well, thanks for coming on with us, and I hope to talk to you again soon.
All right, man. Yeah, bye.
All right. FM Talk 106.5. This is Jeff Poehler filling in for Sean Sullivan. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we'll have Matt Simpson, who's a House candidate in Baldwin County, and we'll take some of your calls. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And this is Jeff Poehler filling in for Sean Sullivan today on FM Talk 106.5, 251-343-0106. Joining us on the line is Matt Simpson. He's the Republican nominee for the House District 96, which I believe is mostly in Baldwin County, maybe a little bit of it over here in Mobile County. But Matt, good to have you on with us today.
Jeff, thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Yeah, so let's get down to it. You're running over there, and you know, just kind of tell us about the lay of the land, and you know, I guess getting out among the voters and what you're hearing. You know, when it comes to what you want to accomplish as a state legislator, and what you're hearing from people that you're trying to win over their votes.
The district I'm in is Daphne, Spanish Ford, and then parts of North Mobile County. Marcus Airland, Satsuma, and Chickasaw. You know, a lot of the concern that people have that I hear is a lot to do with the I-10 bridge and making sure the I-10 bridge is built. I know that a lot of plans are done from that. I know there's been work put in on that. I have no intention of coming in office and trying to change what they have done. What I want to do is come into office and make sure that we're not waiting for the state of Alabama to get anything done, that we're not waiting. You know, Congressman Byrne has been exceptional in getting the federal part done that they needed, and my understanding is they've been waiting on some state stuff to get done. My goal is to help make sure that we're not waiting on the state to get what they need to get done.
Do you foresee any obstacles on the I-10 bridge? Seems to me things are kind of going along about as we expected, but every now and then you'll hear it. Now and then you'll hear something come up. Another part of the state talking about their problems, and you'll see a story written on AL.com suggesting this could you know, impede that progress. Is there any reason to believe that things won't keep going along as they are now?
I have no reason to believe that things are going to catch a hiccup or anything like that. Everything that I've heard, everything that I've seen, is we're going according to plan. We've got a great leadership team that is working on that in both Mobile, Baldwin County government, as well as state government, and Congressman Byrne has been exceptional again representing his district and getting that stuff done, what needed to be done in Washington.
Okay, so you're before I interrupted you, you were talking about some other things I think that are on people's minds over there in your district in Baldwin County and Mobile County.
Things that I'm passionate about that I want to run for, you know, first and foremost, I'm a prosecutor. I see the criminal justice system, the day in and day out, day-to-day operations of what happens, how you have violent criminals released extremely early from their sentences, and those violent criminals get back out and continue to make the same sentence, the same crime. We've got guidelines that have been put in effect since 2011-2012.
You're breaking up a little on us there, Matt. The perils of live radio. Yeah. You're breaking up a little. You were talking a little bit about, I guess, as a prosecutor, and I think people know you as you work at the Mobile County District Attorney's Office, if I'm not mistaken. What are some areas of improvement? And you said you're talking about, I guess, repeat offenders and things like that. What is the role of the state?
I'm sorry. Can you repeat that? I couldn't hear you.
So you work at the Mobile County District Attorney's Office, and I think you were, right before we were interrupted there, you're talking a little bit about some of the repeat offenses and some of the things going on. What is the role of the state when it comes to our criminal justice system? And where are some problem areas that need to be worked on?
I think the problem areas that we need to work on are making sure that people get their sentences, that they serve the majority of their sentences. I can't tell you the number of times that people commit violent crimes and get out early on parole. And this early release allows them to be back in those communities. I've seen it. I've seen the violent crime increase since these guidelines and these parole mandates to try to get people to prison. Have less population, but they're letting the wrong people out, and I think it's really had a negative effect on our community.
So you talk about that. I don't know, the state, we've had a lot of shakeup in the Attorney General's office over the last 10 years, and the things that the criminal justice system at that level. Do you foresee the I don't know what do you, when I talk about the state's role, where are some areas of improvement you could have and look toward? Is there like funding issues? Are there certain laws, criminal statutes that need to be approved upon or changed? Things of that nature.
Okay. First and foremost, one of the things is going to be mental health. We have to address the mental health problem we have in our state. I think that so much of our law enforcement community are the only mental health providers that these people see. So they're self-medicating, they're getting involved in the drug trade, they're getting involved in that downward cycle that involves the drug use and goes from there, and it just escalates further. I would really like to see our state reinvest in mental health to help ease the problems that go on the criminal justice system.
So we're talking with Matt Simpson. He's the Republican candidate for House District 96. We'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about this. The current occupant of the seat you're running for, Randy Davis, he's gotten in some trouble with the feds, and he's been indicted. Give me your take on that. I've seen some of your opponents in the newspaper talk about it, but I want to get your take and what you think of what you think the issue is there.
It's sad that it's become an issue in the campaign. I have a Democratic opponent and a Libertarian Party opponent, and of course they're going to pounce on this and make it seem like it's a Republican Party issue. One thing that I'm happy about is that we have Attorney General in Alabama that's a Republican. We have U.S. attorneys in Alabama that have been appointed by a Republican president, and they're not factoring in whether or not somebody's a Republican or Democrat when they're going after helping protect and make sure these crimes don't occur. Now, as far as with Representative Davis, I don't know enough evidence one way or another to be able to tell you, hey, I expect him to be guilty, or hey, he's not guilty. What I would like to see the evidence play out, but I can tell you with what he's charged with, it's serious offense. We want to make sure that hopefully he didn't do those things he's alleged to have done, because if he did do those things, he needs to be punished for doing that. This isn't one of those we're walking fine lines of gray area of, hey, maybe this isn't. This is one of the things that he's accused of doing is very serious. I hope he did not do it. Randy has been a good guy, been to represent our district well, but if he did do it, I'll be right there with everybody saying he needs to be punished for what happened.
Beyond the whole Randy Davis escapade and that ordeal, talk a little bit about the general health of the Republican Party. I know you've been active in Republican Party politics for as long as I can remember in Baldwin County, And, you know, we're in a new era with Trump. But do you get a sense that it's still, Republic County is still as solidly red as its reputation? I don't expect it to go, you know, Democrat anytime soon, or at least in our lifetimes. But does it seem to be kind of going along and trotting along as well as it always has?
I do expect Baldwin County to be red. I expect it to stay that way as long as we continue to do the right things as Republican government. If we, you know, we have a responsibility. I was a happy active Republican Party for quite some time. I remember in 2010, I was chair of the Young Republicans when we took possession of the state house. As far as Alabama, the Republicans became the majority in the representatives in the state house and the Senate. That was a big day for us. Democrats had it for 136 years, and I was glad to be a part of the team that helped campaign to try to take the house back. Now, as we have a responsibility when we took the house and the Senate to make sure that we follow through and can represent the interests of our district and not represent the interests of ourselves. I've been in public service. I've been a prosecutor at the Mobile DA's office, the Baldwin DA's office, and part of that comes, and you understand, if you're working for public service, you're not doing it for the money. You're doing it to make the area better. As long as we continue to have people represent our district and our area and understand that you can't do this with the goal of getting rich. You have to do this and with the goal of serving the people and being the representative of the people. And, you know, we make the salary would be made based on the median income, and you have to understand that that's probably going to be your salary. You may could be able to do a couple other things, may have some other business on the side, but you're not going to be a millionaire trying to get into government. And if you're trying to be a millionaire getting into government, you're doing it for the wrong reasons.
All right, well, there you have it. We have Matt Simpson, House candidate for District 96. Matt, I want to thank you for coming on with us today, and thanks for your time.
Thank you, sir.
All right. And there you go. That I think is to me, pretty solid in the R column. You know, I think there's a Democrat and a Libertarian running, and they're making a little bit of noise, especially coming out of this Randy Davis episode. But it's hard to see Democrats getting a notching a win there, and I, you know, even more difficult to see the Libertarian candidate notching a win. But we're happy to hear from those candidates if they're out there listening. We got about 1 minute left today in Midday Mobile. You'll have the experienced and knowledgeable Sean Sullivan back in this chair on Monday. But I want to thank the listeners out there for having me in and my the other host in, Jonathan McConnell, and that was certainly a pleasure and for me to come in and fill in for Sean Sullivan this week. But we got coming up at the top of the hour, we have Paul Feinbaum. Stay tuned for that. This is Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. I want everybody to have a good weekend, and thanks for listening.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Ed Bowen from Taylor Martino back in studio, and it is time for those last-minute vacations. People going over the hill and through the woods to Grandma's house or to the mountains or to the beach or to the amusement park. I mean, it's driving season, man.
Yeah, living here this time of year, we all know about the crazy drivers and people going on vacations. I just got back from North Carolina with my family, and I had to drive a lot of interstate driving, 8 hours there and back. And it's a harrowing experience. and you have to, you notice all of the people that are not paying attention. They're looking at their phone, they're doing something, and it's dangerous. And so this time of year, it's just so important to stick that cell phone in the glove box or your console, turn it off, whatever you got to do, because I mean, really, people's lives are at stake.
But that's part of the equation. Absolutely. Responsibility on your own part. But you can do everything right. I know you see this with 20 years practice in law. You can be doing everything right, and that still doesn't always protect you from an accident.
And I'm kind of a freak about it because, I've been an injury lawyer. You know, I started out on the defense side, but I'm on the plaintiff side now, but my whole career, my 21-year career. And so I overanalyze what goes on the road there. And I've had a lot of near misses, and I see things coming up. You know, I think about line of sight, and, you know, from trucking cases and all kinds of stuff like that. So, I mean, I'm not a specially trained driver, but just knowing what I know.
Right. You've seen all the ways it can go wrong.
I know how scary it is and how your life can change instantly, because that happens to our clients, who, you know, completely healthy, 25-year-old, on your way home from work, and, you know, somebody just pulls out in front of you, and, you know, then, you know, you're basically disabled for the rest of your life. And that can happen to anybody at any time. Sometimes there's nothing you can do to avoid that. So that's scary.
Yeah, and when that happens, that split second you describe, and you said impacts the rest of your life, not only what you're doing today and the next week, but you've talked about cases with me in the past where somebody was on this trajectory to get their first house or second house, or they're getting ready to get the kids off to college and pay for that. I mean, these things that are lifelong goals, not just week-to-week goals, and that comes to an end.
Yeah, what I see and just know from living and raising children and all that is that it's this is a hard life. I mean, there are very few people that have the easy life in this country. And so when you're thrown a curveball of, hey, I can't work for 6 months, or I'm going to have a permanent limp, just kind of throw that into the mix of what you're already dealing with. And, you know, people just lose hope. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I grab them. I, you know, sometimes gently, you know, sometimes, a little bit not gently, not physically mean, grab them. And
like a Marine
like a Marine with love. And I make sure that they hold on to that hope, because it can just be taken away from you.
And that has got to be part of it, too. If we come in, get that appointment, you take our case, you're working on this case, but we can only take that to trial when the courts are ready for it to go to trial.
Yeah, it takes a long time to get to trial. So, I mean, we try to settle a case, certainly, but that's contingent on the insurance company doing what's right. And I can't control their actions, and a lot of times they don't do what's right, and I'm forced to file a lawsuit. And if I do, I have to go to trial. It could take a year. Could, you know, I just had a case almost went to trial, took 2.5 years, and then we settled it, you know, a couple weeks before the trial date. So that's a long time, and that was for a fellow that I've talked about on this show whose life was changed, and it's been so rough for him. And I'm glad that we're at the end of that journey for him.
You know, but that time frame, having somebody with us who knows how this all works, to know who's done this before many, many times, because you mentioned hope, and I can imagine somebody in this process, that long slog, just thinking, well, I just give up here. They'll give me a little something, and, you know, that's all I get.
Right. I have people that call me up, and, you know, they come into my office, and, you know, the first thing I have to work on is making sure that, you know, they have hope. They know that they're an American, and that, you know, we're going to fight for their rights, and that they're going to get through this eventually. But, yeah, we have to guide them through that process. And I take away all the pain in the neck that goes with this legal stuff and having to deal with, you know, obnoxious insurance adjusters or whoever, you know, the risk manager people. And we handle all that. And I tell my clients, listen, your job is just to get well. Because I can't do that for them.
Right.
And so that's a load off their shoulders.
And I guess, you know, I guess this may not even be the right word, but we all want to know, if something comes from the insurance company, is this fair? Is this fair? Should we expect, is this number fair? Is this a fair accounting of what our damages were? I don't know that, but thank goodness you do.
Well, what I think is fair is, you know, what a reasonable, you know, jury, or if you got 12 citizens, what they would say, you know, that is worth, you know, because you've got pain and suffering, emotional damage oftentimes, and, you know, you can't really put a number on that. I mean, I had a client whose best friend and cousin was killed by a drunk driver. They were both in the car together, and, you know, she tried to shake her after the dust settled and wake her up, because she didn't know she had died. And you know, that was tremendous emotional trauma in that case. And the insurance company just said, well, we shouldn't have to pay for that. I'm like, what country do you live in? And that's a situation where, you know, you have to have someone that knows the law and has experience, and that's what we have.
All right, let's do this. Let's if somebody is in this situation, knows somebody too, maybe a family member that's gone through something like this recently, how do they get in touch with you?
You can just Google Taylor Martino or Mobile, Alabama, or you can call 251-433-3131.
Thank you, Ed.
Thanks, Sean.
No representation is made that legal services performed are greater than the quality of legal services of others.